Good morning and welcome to Backchat. I'm Noreen Mair and your co-host this morning is Brian Curtis. Brian, good morning to you.
Good morning, Noreen.
And thanks for stepping in as Ada is sick. I hope you've read up on the next topics because it's a tough one. Two topics today, bitcoins and animal cruelties. First, we turn to Bitcoin, the buzzword I'm sure you've heard about recently. As Hong Kong plans to get the world's second Bitcoin ATM, we ask, what's so attractive about bitcoins? As a form of digital currency, who controls it? And should Bitcoin be encouraged amongst banking authorities and businesses? And would you consider paying by bitcoins on your next purchase? Give us a call with your thoughts. Our number is 233-88266, or you can email us at backchat@rthk.hk, or go to our Facebook page at Backchat on RTHK Radio 3 and comment there. After 9:15, the latest court judgment on animal cruelty. We ask, is 16 months enough? Joining us for our first discussion on Bitcoins, we've got in our Kowloon Tong studio, Ben Dilo, Bitcoin trader, user and investor, and in our central studio, Peter Carl, Bitcoin miner and IT manager from Lun Lun Zhou Guzheng Studio, and also David Webb, founder of website.com, and also Anthony Hope, expert in virtual currency compliance. Good morning to you all, gents.
Morning.
Good morning.
Maybe if I can start off with you first, David Webb. Good morning to you.
Morning.
What's so attractive about Bitcoins?
Nothing. No, it's attractive to speculators, or anybody who likes a gamble. I mean, I've said to people if they want to treat it like the Mark VI, we're probably with a negative expected return, but the possibility of a payoff, but not as large as the Mark VI, then, you know, fine, go ahead. It's like betting on two flies crawling up the wall or something like that. You know, other than that, it doesn't have a lot going for it. Intellectually, the mathematics behind it is fantastic. You know, I read
You're
maths.
A mathematician.
Yeah, I did maths, and I was also into computing in the 1980s. So, you know, that side of things is quite interesting. A huge amount of electricity is being burnt and probably carbon emitted to perform the calculations that ratify the transactions in the Bitcoin system. Currently they're performing something like 10 to the power of 19 calculations per second, what they call hashes, in order to check all the transactions in the system. But you know, that's just money going in, but there's not a lot coming out. And the biggest flaw, I think, in the system is that because there's going to be a finite number, which is rapidly being approached, although it will tail off for 100 years, in practice it's being approached quite rapidly.
When you say finite number, you mean 21 million
bitcoins, yes. I mean, 11.5 million in the first 4 years, and then 6.25 million in the next 4 years, and so on, roughly. But because of that, some perception of scarcity, most people who have bought into it or have mined into it are holding and hoarding with the expectation that one day it'll become a widely used currency. Now, if everybody thinks it's going to become widely used, but everybody's hoarding it, then by definition it can't become widely used. And eventually, you know, there's going to be this realization, if everyone's going to be looking around the room, seeing everyone else with their hands in their pockets, not spending very much, and no one really accepting it except as a gimmick. And probably at that point, if intervention hasn't happened on a regulatory front, the whole sort of game will collapse.
Okay, so let's go to Anthony to because he'll take the other side of it. Anthony, David says the two main reasons it won't work is hoarding and transactional fees, and these huge power costs that it will take to generate or mine. You know, if you read David's piece, it's hard to get past the nodes and the blocks of data and all of this. But you, on the other hand, go to the side of his argument, which says, yes, it's elegant, yes, it's nice, and you believe it will actually work.
I do, Brian, and thank you for having me on here again. My take on Bitcoin is what we see at the moment is very much a short-term speculative jump. People have jumped onto it because they've seen what's been happening with the Federal Committee Senate hearings. They've jumped onto it because of what happened in China with the trading boom. But I would expect that to dampen down. And over time, and once the financial architecture sort of comes up to scratch and starts to replicate what we see in the traditional banking system, what I'm expecting to happen is it becomes more of a sort of payment processor type product, something that allows us to move money overseas and between bank accounts, between currencies at a lower rate than it would cost us to transfer through the traditional banking system. And that, to me, is the beauty and the elegance of Bitcoin.
Of course, it needs to be stable for it to be used as a medium of exchange. It's been rather controversially hyperactive over the past 6 months. Why would anybody use it to settle a deal when you don't know what the value would be?
I think the simple answer to that is at the moment they wouldn't, and frankly they would be rather silly to do so. But I think you need to look at how young the currency is. At the moment, I think just before Christmas, Mt. Gox, which is the large, with the exclusion of BTC China, which is obviously under pressure from the PBOC, Mt. Gox is pretty much the largest exchange out there, and they announced their 1 millionth account just before Christmas. So taking that as an indicator for the market, that suggests that Bitcoin is still very small. Now, the market does need to increase. You need many more transactions. You need many more accounts. And that will take us towards stability.
Let's get the views of everybody, and then we can kind of pick apart these things. Ben Dilo, you're a trader, user, and investor with us here in our studios at Broadcasting House. It can gain in value as more people use it. I mean, that's the simple math of it, I suppose. And do you see more and more people? We heard Zynga, the game company, agreeing to use it. And we've seen a lot of small companies as well as big companies say they will accept Bitcoin.
Absolutely. It's just going to become more and more accepted. It's going to become another currency, just like you could use US dollars or Hong Kong dollars. Overstock.com, which is a large competitor to Amazon in the US, is announcing they're going to start accepting Bitcoins in the middle of this year. The demand, obviously, there is speculation in the currency at the moment, but it's going to build up to become more useful. I mean, I was in London over Christmas and went to a pub and bought a pint with Bitcoins, and more and more transactions like that are going to occur just because it's so convenient that, you know, I'm from Hong Kong, didn't have to buy any sterling, but yeah, I had Bitcoins.
I want to go to Peter Carl, Bitcoin miner and IT manager from Lun Lun Zhou Gujiang Studio. Now, you guys are the first business in Hong Kong to accept Bitcoins. Why this move? You hear from the panel, perhaps it's not the best form of currency. Why are you accepting Bitcoins as a form of payment?
Good morning. I have been attracted to the philosophy and benefits of Bitcoin since its onset in 2009. And I have this year convinced Ms. So that this is a viable and usable tool to increase the sales and the turnover in her company, the Solun and Gujing Studio. And she is very welcoming to new revolutionary ideas, and she understands the benefits as well. It's ease of trade, low cost, and it's equality. We have started in the Solun and Gujing Studio, started accepting Bitcoins since September last year.
Have you had customers pay in Bitcoins?
Yes. It's a limited number, and none of them are from Hong Kong. I believe the amount is about 10 or so Bitcoins so far, and customers are mostly located in Canada and the United States. And what Ms. So does is she teaches music not only to local students in Hong Kong, but also online using Skype.
David, what do you think about that? You know, it may be a store of value on one side. On the other side, a lot of people kind of like it for its transactional purposes.
Well, what's wrong with the US dollar or any other widely used currency? I mean, you can pay people, if you're not involved in commerce with a merchant account, you can actually pay people for free using PayPal. There are other big companies that are perfectly capable of setting up payment networks like Google, Apple, Microsoft, and so on.
Well, perhaps one
Google
thing would be
Google
that,
Wallet in the US.
So there isn't a printing press behind Bitcoin, whereas there is behind the Fed.
Which would you rather have, a currency that depreciates in a somewhat predictable, slow, orderly manner where you don't get 20% daily movements and you can pay your taxes with it, and it's legal tender to settle all bills due in America? Or something with no backing other than digits, which isn't legal tender anywhere and fluctuates wildly in value. I mean, the few people who are accepting it, like Richard Branson, who, you know, has a typical gimmick of, on his point, his side, has said you can buy a space flight with them, although he isn't yet launching. But he won't offer you a refund in bitcoins. He'll go right round to the exchange and dump them as fast as he possibly can if he's sensible. He'll offer you a refund in US dollars if you change your mind about the space flight. It's, as you said, it isn't stable, and therefore it's not really a sensible transaction currency, and it's unlikely to become so.
Anthony, why aren't more central banks and governments getting behind Bitcoin?
I would say resources, primarily, and also a slight fear of the unknown. I'm sure you know I worked for the UK Treasury previously. So you have to remember there's only 1,800 people inside the UK Treasury dealing with, you know, a nation economy plus all the international issues. So you see this replicated around the world. So to spend time and resource on something that has significant media headlines but is not yet having major economic impact, it isn't really a good use of their time and effort.
Why would they get behind it when they have their own currency that they can print?
Yeah.
Or that they can control, at least. You know, their concern is anti-money laundering, and I believe that's what Anthony's area of specialty is, they are concerned that people don't use this as a conduit for illegal transactions or,
sure,
in the case of China and India,
that,
for evading capital
controls. Yeah, if you can, capital flight and money laundering, if you can control that and set that aside, most governments have obviously a national currency, but they also allow the use of all the other currencies around. This is just another currency, a virtual currency.
Might I take the space there to rebut David's point? He says the governments are only interested in the AML side. If that were accurate, you wouldn't have heard members like the FBI come towards the US Senate committee and say actually they didn't see Bitcoin as the major source of AML issues at the moment. There is certainly scope as the currency increases, as it gets more accepted and goes wider. But certainly at the moment, it's not the right space for criminals to be involved in. The risk profile just is not significant enough.
So we've got three proponents and one opponent. So I think I have to switch over to the other side. Ben, this is just a fad. People kind of dig it because it's cool and it's virtual and you go online and you do it and you can brag at a dinner party that, you know, you bought some Bitcoin and, you know, a friend of yours is mining it. It's just a fad.
Bitcoin itself may be a fad, but cryptocurrencies are here to stay. The Bitcoin network itself has its limitations, but the idea of cryptocurrencies is a very disruptive technology that is here to stay and is going to be used. It's useful for transferring money around the world instantly.
Why aren't any of the others taking off then? Litecoin, Peercoin, I mean, there's actually dozens of these things floating around. Everyone's trying to launch their own bit of code on the internet that will
and some
establish
of them
a currency.
Have utility and some of them don't. I mean, Litecoin, for example, has a currency in circulation or a market cap of around, I think, $1 billion. Bitcoin is, I think, around $10 billion. Compare that to the money supply of Hong Kong, which is only, $40 billion.
This is interesting because, you know, the actual float and the number of transactions in these things is minuscule by comparison. In fact, what claims to be the world's largest Bitcoin exchange in Mt. Gox had some of its cash seized by the U.S. authorities and has a monthly withdrawal limit of $50,000. That's compared with a theoretical value of all the coins in circulation of over $10 billion, as you say. How can you get a realistic currency going when you can't even exchange it and withdraw it reliably?
No, look at
the two big
trader
exchanges. There's Mt. Gox there. There's another one called Bitstamp in, I think, Slovenia. They have wildly disparate exchange rates against global currencies.
There's a reason for the disparate exchange rate between Mt. Gox and Bitstamp. That's because Mt. Gox, you can't get your US dollars out quickly. Therefore, the price is inflated.
But they claim to be the biggest show in town.
Well,
so,
that's marketing. I mean, no one seriously expects to get US dollars out
and
of Mt. Gox.
If you look at the blockchain, there's an interesting site called blockchain.info, which analyzes the data. And the actual number of transactions per day has been pretty static, around 55,000 for over a year now. It's not that the number of transactions has been going up in terms of wider acceptance. The value of them, of course, has because of the inflation in the US dollar value of Bitcoin from something like about 50 a year ago to 1,000 today. That points to pure financial speculation in these transactions. They're getting larger by value because the people who've been hoarding them are just trading them amongst themselves.
Perhaps,
And new players are being sucked into it, of course.
Perhaps let's go back to the beginning for someone like me who's not as financially minded as all of you gents. How did Bitcoin come about? I mean, what's the history of Bitcoin? Can somebody enlighten our audience?
There is an academic paper. It certainly reads like an academic paper. It's well written by, I think, an individual because he wrote in the first person on his website at the time in 2008. Proposing the maths behind it. He switched on his computer on, I think, the 1st of January 2009, or very close to that, and started generating bitcoins. And you can tell from the what's called the difficulty level that there was only one PC in the world doing this until there was over a million coins outstanding because the difficulty level didn't rise. And then it sort of gradually grew from there. So you can still go back on the Internet Archive and find this original website and the paper.
Using the pseudonym Satoshi Nakamoto, what is that? What does that stand for?
Well, no one's figured out who that is yet. There have been speculation about who it was. I would suspect it's probably somebody who was conflicted by his job and wasn't able to be publicly identifiable. Certainly somebody who's a computer scientist and not someone who's an economist because he tries to model it on gold system, the old gold standard. But there's a big difference with gold, for example. When the price goes up, more mines become viable and the rate of production goes up. But with Bitcoin, when the price goes up, more people switch on machines, but the same difficulty level gets increased so that the rate of production is roughly the same a fixed number of coins in each 10-minute period, roughly 25 coins now per period.
So, Peter, is it you? You're a miner and an IT manager. Were you ever a central banker?
I'm central banker in my home.
Well, it could be Anthony Hope. I'll tell you, he's a proponent of it. And you used to be a regulator, right? Could it be you?
I wasn't a regulator. I just worked for I was head of European finance for the UK Treasury. So it could have been. I wish it was. I would certainly be richer now than I am. But no, unfortunately not.
What about this claim that David made about hoarding? It's hard to see it coming into wide use if people are hoarding it because they see the speculative side.
I don't buy it. And I don't buy it because you're dealing with a currency that's only within its first 5 or so years of usage. There is certainly a hoarding issue. But a lot of that hoarding is taking place because people are seeing the rampant speculation, and that speculation is being driven by the media. That's going to drop off.
Surely you see more people using it, then there will be less hoarding, I would imagine. Overnight, there was a real estate agent in New York who said that he would accept his commissions, not the selling price for the unit, but he would accept his commissions in Bitcoin.
Absolutely. It's more people using it, and it's why they're using it, and it's how they're using it. Simply saying, as people move into Bitcoin, people are speculating, is insufficient. You have to think, to take to the gentleman to the right of me, Peter, his business, and it is a business, is using it to receive money. Some people are going to be doing this on an individual basis. Some people will just be moving money overseas between their accounts and between currencies. So there's many different ways of using the Bitcoin. And it's about the currency moving into that space. That's what's going to give it the number of transactions that's going to help stabilize the currency, which will then create this sort of positive circle, which will bring more users into it.
So what about David Webb's point? Why not just pay with US dollars? Why not just pay with normal money? Why pay with bitcoins?
Well, for many reasons. Firstly, not everyone in the world has access to bank accounts. Secondly, I think David pointed out PayPal. Well, PayPal is tremendously expensive. He said if you don't have a mercantile account. Well, frankly, if you have to have a business running, then you need a mercantile account unless you wish to go against PayPal's rules. So there are many reasons why you would use Bitcoin.
But is it easier to pay with bitcoins than with cash? Isn't it?
Internationally, yes, unless you wish to send a nice little brown envelope through the post.
Okay, our number is 233-88266, or you can email us at backchat@rthk.hk, or go to our Facebook page and comment there. Herminder has done. He says, I think it's great. Bitcoin is an alternative medium of exchange already and will continue to be more widely adopted. Businesses should begin to accept Bitcoin. If they are worried about the volatile exchange rate, they can immediately convert their Bitcoins into Hong Kong dollars, taking out the risk. If banking wants to get into action, why not? Isn't it what the free free market is all about. However, anyone who gets into Bitcoin should first study what it is about and be aware of the risks. If people want to make a quick buck, they should find themselves getting burned. Finally, Bitcoin should never be regulated. It is a true free market currency and should stay that way. That thought comes from Herminda. David Webb, what about that point? You're a free marketeer. Mm. This is the essence of free market.
Yes, it is, isn't it? You can applaud the principle, but I think in practice it's not going to work. There isn't any backing behind it. I mean, you know, one alternative might be, for those who are so keen on the gold standard, would be to simply use the Spider Gold Trust as a currency instead. There's something like $150 billion of gold sitting in a vault, acting as collateral for these depository receipts that you can buy on exchanges worldwide. Well, you could create fractions of those and use those as a virtual currency, and it would actually have some backing behind it.
There is no backing behind the U.S. dollar either.
There is the full faith and credit of the U.S. government.
How can you trust them?
Well, they've never demonetized any of their currency.
Never say never.
But you know, over 200-year history, they haven't.
It takes us to a good point, Ben. Do you think that the demise, to a certain degree, of gold over the past 2 or 3 years has enhanced the appeal of Bitcoin in terms of store of value?
The drop in value, and I'm not sure.
Yes,
it's
the
demised.
Drop. Part-time or short-term demise. It's gone from $1,900 plus to around $1,250. That's a big trip down. Has that maybe enhance the appeal of Bitcoin?
I think the kind of people who put their money in gold are looking for a safe haven, and they're unlikely to put that into a new currency like Bitcoin. But I think there are parallels between gold and Bitcoin in terms of, gold isn't really backed by anything. You spend money to mine it. You spend money to dig it out of the ground, form it into bars, and then you spend money to store it in the ground in vaults.
Well, it's backed by something that people want. Gold is a precious metal, whereas this is just backed by a code,
it's
a protocol.
Conductive. You can use it in jewelry. There are some uses for it, at least. You can at least wear it if you don't want to spend it.
Surely the value of something is what you place in it. So if more people use and use Bitcoin, then the value of it will go up. I read somewhere that some people compare Bitcoin to gold on steroids. What's your thought on that, Anthony?
I think that's probably accurate. The value of Bitcoin will go up, as more people use it. But then you have to remember that each individual Bitcoin can be broken down into 100 million Satoshis. So when people talk about the supposed limit on it, the 21 million, in real terms, actually, there's a very extendable limit on the use of Bitcoin.
But then how do you go about regulating Bitcoin? Surely some sort of regulation should be in place to protect customers and businesses.
Well, there's actually a sort of self-regulating aspect to it, because the software is written by consensus, basically. And if not all of the miners are running the same software, if they don't agree on amendments to the software, then it doesn't get adopted. And it's a sort of majority vote by the number of machines running the software. So they can tinker with the specifications. They could, in theory, even raise the 21 million limit at some point by consensus, after everyone's been sucked into believing that that's all they're going to be. They could say, hang on a minute, you know, actually GDP increases, and we need to, in order to stop it becoming an inherently deflationary currency, we need to increase it by, say, 2% per year. And they could rewrite the specifications for that. So that in itself isn't a deal breaker. And yes, you can use fractions of them. And you can also have fractional reserve banking. So in theory, you could have banks which accept coins as deposits and then lend them out to other people who then spend them and put them back in banks and so on. Although for people to have confidence in those banks, there would probably need to be some sort of regulatory authority established amongst those Bitcoin banks, or even amongst the central banks, to make sure they have enough capital adequacy, so that people don't get runs on the Bitcoin banks. So it could end up forming its own self-regulation system if it got that far, but I don't think it will get that far.
Peter, what about hacking? Do you have any concern that somehow it can be hacked?
Well, as you know, there have been instances that some of the Bitcoin exchanges have been hacked, and I see this as a faulty security system in those websites. Security of these websites is very critical and very difficult to achieve. Well, so far, some of the exchanges have a flawless record. I'm also concerned about the security of the Bitcoin on my computer at home. And
what's your concern?
I'm concerned that some hacker somewhere, nowhere, somewhere in China or
NSA,
or
perhaps
NSA, whoever they are, they can break into my computer at home and
put in a keystroke logger,
extract some private keys, and get access to my Bitcoin wallet. It's a risk, and what I do is simply keep my computer updated to the latest software, operating system, antivirus, and I take sensible precautions about not downloading content that I don't trust and not opening email attachments from people that I don't know.
And what happens if you die? Do your private keys and your password go with you in your head, or is there some backup system for that?
Yeah, there's a backup system. I guess my family is informed where my private keys to my Bitcoin wallet is.
And the passwords as well.
And the passwords as well.
Yes. I mean, some of these, they won't get lost down the back of the sofa, but they can get lost through people losing hard drives. There's a famous case where someone, one of the early collectors...
Hold that thought, David Webb. Tell that story after the 9 o'clock news. A quick look at the weather before the news. Mainly cloudy with sunny periods. The maximum temperature will be around 20 degrees Celsius during the day. Fresh easterly winds moderately, gradually later. The outlook, milder during the day tomorrow. The air temperature is at 17 degrees Celsius, and the relative humidity is at 82%. Good morning and welcome back to Backchat this Tuesday morning with me, Noreen Mayer, and your co-host this morning is Brian Curtis. This morning on Backchat, we're tackling the Bitcoin buzz as Hong Kong is set to get the world's second Bitcoin ATM. We ask, what's so attractive about Bitcoin and will you consider using Bitcoin to pay for things? You can give us a call with your thoughts. Our number is 233-88266. That's 233-88266. Or you can email us at backchat@rthk.hk or go to our Facebook page at Backchat on RTHK Radio 3 and comment there. And after 9:15, we'll be talking about animal cruelty as two men were sentenced 16 months to jail. Joining us for our first discussion on Bitcoin, we've got in our Kowloon Tong studio, Ben Dilo, Bitcoin trader, user, and investor. And also in our central studio, Peter Carl, Bitcoin miner and IT manager from the Lun Lun Zhou Guzheng studio. And also David Webb, founder of website.com, and also Anthony Hope, expert in virtual currency compliance. You can email us anytime, as Rod has done so. He says, BTC is an amazing tool. You can bypass all currency controls to any country. You can transfer as much money as you wish without any fees. Anybody can accept it. Credit cards usually require a certain amount of monthly business to give you a point of sale. It is free from inflation and would be a huge advantage for Hong Kongers that have to suffer from the erosion of purchasing power that the dollar peg generates. And by the way, BTC cannot be regulated even if government wants to. The only thing that can be regulated is the points of exchange to local government currencies, but not the actual BTC protocol. That thought comes from Rod.
Yes, well, we should also give a shout out to Queenie Mann, our young producer, who put together an August panel for this discussion. It's great to have actual users of it and a big skeptic like David Webb. Ben, as somebody who uses it, walk people through how you actually do it. You've got a public key and a private key. You know, get it on an exchange. How do you actually do it?
So Bitcoin is stored in something known as a Bitcoin wallet. A wallet can be considered a bit like a bank account, except you can create one, anyone can create one instantly and freely. A Bitcoin wallet is made up of two components. One is your public key, and this could be considered maybe your account, your bank account number. Anyone who knows your bank account number can put money in. So if I give out my public key, you can transfer Bitcoins to me. The second component is the private key, which I keep secret. This private key, you could consider it maybe your bank account password for online banking or your PIN. Anyone who knows this detail can spend or transfer money out of the wallet.
And so do you keep that on a hard disk or do you keep it on a piece of paper somewhere?
So when I'm trading and using Bitcoin, I'll have one wallet with a certain amount of Bitcoin in that I'll keep on my phone or on my computer in an encrypted manner with a password. But as an investor, I also have a significant number of Bitcoins that I store offline, I physically on paper, something known as a paper wallet. So I have in my wallet, just as I have Hong Kong dollars, I also have a bit of paper with a public key and a private key printed, storing my bitcoins. And this is to provide some physical security that effectively no one can hack my computer.
They could just pinch your wallet instead.
Absolutely.
Well, they could do that with real money too. What keeps you up at night?
I think government regulation is probably the biggest threat to the value of Bitcoin in terms of speculation and it going up and down. A lot of that swings on the back of announcements that China is clamping down on financial exchanges in China using Bitcoin, or if it's US government Senate hearings. I would rather see Bitcoin just have more and more users and become more and more widely available and not just have hot money rush in and out on the back of news cycles. So I'd rather it grow with an economy than with speculation.
Anthony, is that a possible problem that you'll see more actions like the PBOC? It's not banned, but they simply don't allow you to put local currency on deposit against it.
Well, firstly, I agree with Ben that the nature of Bitcoin, where it's been reacting to government statements, has been creating a flush of hot money, and that isn't good for the Bitcoin economy. In answer to your question, I don't think we will see many governments following the PBOC line. PBOC was in an awkward position. They'd taken a policy stance with QQ coins, and the Bitcoin system was pretty much exactly the same. The difficulty they have is that QQ coins was issued by a single entity within China. So it was controllable from within China. Bitcoin is not. It can't be regulated in that same way. So they face a policy decision. Obviously, they can't legitimize Bitcoin and give the entrepreneurs the same footing that the US and the EU have, because that would go against their policy position with QQ coins. On the other side of the fence, by now, By stopping Bitcoin from being locally deposited, they're now giving EU and US entrepreneurs a chance to take over the field. And the question for the Chinese, and I think you see from the fact they're allowing their Bitcoin companies to continue to actually run their platforms, although not take local currency, they want to keep the entrepreneurs at least on a square footing.
Okay, our email address is backchat@rthk.hk. Anthony has written in to say, today, I'm going to play the role of an economic student trying his best to analyze whether Bitcoin is a good alternative medium of exchange and store of value, which are the two out of the three basic criteria for money. In addition, I will also address the third criterion of being money, unit of exchange. He says, Bitcoin is not a serious alternative to any major convertible currencies such as the US dollar, euro, or pound sterling, as Bitcoin cannot be used all types of payments, like the USD and euro, can do within their country of origin. Remember that US dollars and euro can be converted at free market prices without restriction into foreign currency for making payment abroad. In each country, the monetary authorities ensure that their currencies remain broadly stable in value over time, but Bitcoin has been very volatile in value over time. Now back to Economics 101. Bitcoin does not measure up to three basic criteria for money. First, medium of exchange for a very wide range of transactions. Second, unit of exchange, that is, Bitcoins cannot be used to measure income or wealth or to present a company's accounts. And third, they cannot act as a stable store of value for savings and investment. Of course, if you host don't mind receiving your salary in bitcoins rather than Hong Kong dollars, US dollars, pound sterling, then it may be a day of bitcoins in a serious alternative medium of exchange, store value, and unit of exchange. That thought comes from Anthony. David, it seems like you have somebody who backs your thoughts.
Yeah, of course he's right. But I just want to say something about transaction fees. It was mentioned earlier that there aren't any. Well, that's not quite right. There are, at the moment, very low Bitcoin transaction fees built into the software. As the incentive for mining goes down, as fewer coins are produced in the future because it's designed to halve every 4 years in rate of production, then the system will need to look to fees to support its existence. And at that point, the cost of transactions in bitcoins, if it survives that long, would go up. I'm as opposed as anyone, and I've written about it several years ago, to the cartel in credit card fees. Basically, there's a bit like the roaming system for mobile phones. There's a rate charged between the card operators, between merchants and banks, that keeps the cost of credit cards artificially high. But they do provide some value in that process, in the sense that you can complain about a transaction, you can potentially get it reversed, and there's an overhead cost of doing that. And there's also the various point schemes which rebate quite a lot of those fees if you use them sensibly. In theory, new electronic payment networks are welcome to provide more competition and drive down those transaction costs. But you don't need a new currency to do that. You can denominate these transactions, whether you're running the Google Wallet system or a future Apple Pay system or a Tencent Pay system or anything that relies on very large numbers of users. You can denominate those transactions in real-world currencies like the US dollar or the euro or even the Hong Kong dollar, a pretty minor currency. So there isn't a need to have a new denomination, a very volatile one without any backing or legal standing.
But given the
to denominate those transactions, we can have more competition, we can have more payment networks without a new currency.
Given the open source nature of this invention and the spirit of the early use of Bitcoin, perhaps the transaction fees will be kept quite minimal. Anthony?
I would expect them to remain fairly minimal. And with the miners, obviously, more miners are moving into the space, and certainly Peter, as an ex-miner himself, can probably talk better on this. But as more miners move in, their return lowers, and more of them fall out of the game, which then increases the money that's going to come back to these remaining miners in the system.
But in order to mine it, you've got to ramp up the electricity cost to power all those supercomputers. Peter?
Yes, I have decided to invest into a Bitcoin mining rig, and that was about September last year, and the machine arrived in December, I believe, last year, started mining. I had high hopes that there would be I would be reaping big rewards in mining Bitcoins. Not so far, unless the Bitcoin appreciates dramatically. I think I might have done better had I bought some Bitcoins instead.
Keeps you warm at night, though. If you're in a cold country, you can run it as a heater. It's a bit noisy, but
that's why they're all setting up in Iceland.
Adam writes in to say, I've mined for about 2 to 3 weeks and now have the equivalent of about $4 Hong Kong in Bitcoin.
Great.
This is just by leaving my computer on and running a program at night while I'm at work.
Here's the conundrum. If the fees are not very high and then there isn't much of an incentive in future to run the machinery, then fewer machines will be needed, and it'll be possible for one group or even a single company to control the majority of the machinery. And then you've got a new Visa or MasterCard who's able to set fees just a little bit below what they charge, and it becomes loses any of its claimed advantages in terms of lower transaction costs, but at the same time is more volatile than world currencies. So
the big evil corporates will take it over.
It's already there are two mining pools. People tend to, in order to even out the win, if you like, from this lottery of running your mining machinery all night, people form consortiums, mining pools. There are already two that account for about 35-40% of the market. It's quite possible they'll consolidate down into one at some point.
Our number is 233-88266, or you can write to us on Facebook, Backchat on RTHK Radio 3. Jerry has done so. Jerry says, it's a waste of energy and electricity to mine them now. It's not economically viable. There will always be limited and finite number as they get scarcer and they cost more power, time to mine. Many other virtual currencies are springing up, but Bitcoin is the one with the most publicity. That thought comes from Jerry. What about his point that, you know, there are other virtual currencies around, but Bitcoin is the one with the most publicity. So this is just a fad. Maybe it'll go away. Why so much hype? Why
well, I'm thinking of launching my own, actually. On your show today, I announced that Webcoin will soon be live. As long as I can get enough people to run the software, it'll become the world's dominant currency. So there you go. Nothing to stop me starting one. And I think it's going to be just as credible as Bitcoin is or will be in about a year's time.
I think you have to get behind the queue. I think Kanye West or Kanye West Coin or something came from CoinDesk a few weeks ago.
At least I've got a name that kind of rings.
I don't think Kanye was behind that. It was somebody else just using, and he got angry, and I think he's suing.
But what about Jerry's point that, you know, there are other virtual currencies, so maybe Bitcoin is just the virtual currency today?
Disney currency. I mean, you know, you can get chips when you go into a theme park and spend them on all the rides, but they don't have much value outside of the theme park. I think that's
and so how do you explain it then, David? You know, why is it getting attention?
It's very media-friendly, and whenever someone in a new field, like, you know, in this case, music lessons, announces that they're accepting them, then they get some publicity out of it. You know, it's got this mysterious foundation to it because nobody knows who wrote that paper yet, except the writer, if he's still alive. You know, so it's generated millions of lines of copy in the media, but that doesn't make it viable.
Can I disagree on that? And the reason I disagree is that I think if you went back 2 or 3 years, then I think David would be absolutely spot on the money. However, if you look at the people who are involved with developing Bitcoin at the moment, the people who are currently in Bitcoin are significantly different from those who are starting to drive some of the copycat currencies like Litecoin. I went to a conference a couple of months ago, and the makeup of the conference was almost entirely professionals. And by that, I mean venture capitalists, lawyers, actuaries, people who understand how to take a fledgling business to build it and to drive it in terms of market share and how to develop the economy. And I think Bitcoin has turned a page in terms of moving away from your startup entrepreneur into actually going for something that could become worldwide viable. I was very surprised at the sheer caliber of people who are actually getting engaged with the economy.
David Webb?
Yes, there's a tremendous number of people involved in this. All of them usually writing with a vested interest in Bitcoins in their pockets. You know, so they're giving it the best crack they can. I just don't think it's going to work. And, you know, we've been through fads before, perhaps not one that's quite so global. I mean, the nearest analogy I can think of is, and not a very good one, is the dot-com boom, where everybody was setting up websites in 2000 and so many of them just crashed and burned. And large amounts of venture capital were going into it and lots of good advice was going into it. But that doesn't necessarily...
Just out of curiosity, does anybody have a view on why this clever software designer or person who was able to write code, Satoshi Nakamoto, why they would want to remain anonymous?
Well, perhaps they have a conflict. As I said earlier, perhaps they're working for a firm which wouldn't allow them to do this. In the same way that there's a famous encryption program out there called TrueCrypt, the backers of which we do not know. I suspect they might have worked for the NSA or someone like it and felt that they should liberate their know-how, but their laws or contracts wouldn't allow them to do that.
And is this a new algorithm or is it one that was designed by the NSA or someone like that?
Well, actually, the hashing thing is an NSA creation. SHA, the secure hashing algorithm. It came out of the NSA, but the rest of it is, I think, independently produced.
Okay. Well, what about this? Is it Zynga? Sorry, I don't really play online. Zynga. The online social gaming firm. They're starting to accept bitcoins as payment. Surely this will give rise to more businesses to start accepting bitcoins. So this isn't just a fad, David Webb.
Maybe it's bitcoin donations. I mean, they're certainly not don't have negative value.
Let's ask Ben. You're a user and a trader. Are you finding more and more companies willing to take it?
Yes, certainly. More in the US and Canada. And
give us some examples. We mentioned a few, but what else? Who else?
There are a number of shops, retail shops in Canada that will take Bitcoin. There's a block in Manhattan, I think, where there's an awful lot of businesses. You know,
I think somebody bought a car with just Bitcoins.
But then, Ben, why is it the number of transactions has hardly changed in a year in the system daily?
Good question.
Are people storing it?
So yes, I don't think I mean, everyone's making announcements, we'll accept bitcoins for this or that, but very few transactions are actually being done. Perhaps we could ask Peter of his music teaching client, what has she done with the bitcoins? Has she spent them, found somewhere to spend them, or is she trying to convert them and putting them into an exchange, or what?
Well, I cannot speak for Ms. So's financial transactions, but what she does, that's her private business. But I think what we need to do is, what Bitcoin needs is some publicity and discussions, and more merchants be exposed to the benefits and risk as well to using Bitcoins. And I'm more than happy to go and spend my Bitcoins around Hong Kong, but I just can't. I'm looking for opportunities. I think I look forward to the day when there will be the ATM machine in Hong Kong. I'll be one of the first one to go and try it out. And if there is shops accepting bitcoins for my coffee, anything.
Out of curiosity, David Webb, do you own any bitcoins? Or did you mine any bitcoins?
I actually do have one that somebody sent me as a bit of a joke. It's been sitting on my computer. I don't know what to do with it. Can't be bothered to try and convert it on an exchange. That would involve going through a procedure to open an account.
I'm willing for you to send it to me if you wish.
There are websites like localbitcoins.com.
I thought I might print it out and frame it once it's worthless, you know.
I should just tell a funny story that my son, who is an engineering student, when he was a freshman 3 years ago, apparently put $100 into it when it was worth $2.50. He just had it for a week and then got rid of it, and so he's missed out on $45,000.
he would be able to pay for his own college if he had kept on.
He could pay me back.
Well, meanwhile, thank you all very much indeed to all our guests this morning. Very interesting discussion on bitcoins. Thank you all very much indeed. Thank you to David Webb, founder of website.com. Also to Peter Carl, Bitcoin miner and IT manager. Ben Dilo, Bitcoin trader. And Anthony Hope, expert in virtual currency compliance. Bringing us to the time 9:23. And we turn to